the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, welcome along. It's the FWA podcast for another week. And this week, I'm delighted to say that we've got the chairman of the Football Writers Association, Andy Dunn. Also, of course, a sports columnist, football writer for the Sunday Mirror. Hiya, Andy. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks, Lee. Not bad at all.
Very good. Fresh from watching Wembley, or fresh from watching England at Wembley against Denmark. Probably wasn't the greatest 90 minutes you've ever spent in the stadium, Andy, I guess.
No, it wasn't. It was all a little bit flat for most of the game. There were interesting little sort of side stories in the game, you know, the left-back situation with England, Lallana coming on and lifting the team. But generally the senior players, who you thought might have maybe wanted to make a little bit of a statement in the first game of 2014, I'm talking Gerrard, Rooney, Wilshere, even, you know, he falls into that category now, even though he is still relatively young. They all really didn't sparkle at Wembley at all. So it really was, it was one of those games, you know, I think expectations surrounding England have gradually lowered over the last 2, 3, 4 years. It might even be a deliberate ploy on the management part so that we don't hype them up too much. And I think because of that, there wasn't a real palpable sense of disappointment in the way England played. And there was always a feeling that they would probably, if anyone was going to win a disappointing game, it was going to be England. Because also Denmark weren't particularly, you know, for a team that really could have been quite adventurous. I mean, they're not preparing for anything. They're not in the World Cup. They were also quite negative. So all in all, a disappointing game, but with loads of, you know, sort of little cameo sort of instances that we can look at and think, you know, well, obviously when you get to this stage of our World Cup year, what we're all thinking, we're all looking at it thinking, who's going to be in the squad? Is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? And I think it was interesting for that. And also, the way the actual team is going to look when they walk out on June the 14th in Maynooz against Italy. You're looking at that thinking, all of a sudden, we thought we knew what it might be like. Now, I think, not many of us know at all what the start 11 is going to be.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, just going back to the expectation, I suppose the last tournament was similar as well, where there was very little expectation. There should be even less this time, realistically, because it's in South America. In the past, the press, with a capital P, has been labelled with this thing where it's your fault. You're the ones who've raised this unrealistic expectation on the players and then knocked them down when they haven't managed to achieve it. Whether that's true or not, I'm not asking you to defend the press with a capital P, but that won't happen this time. There's no way that anyone, whether it be a fan, I mean, a bookmaker or anyone else, and by the way, bookmakers have also entered into that that thing, because, you know, England being around the 8-1 price to win previous World Cups was fairly farcical, really. The prices now are much more realistic. There's no way we can get excited. Really, now we're in a situation as a fan myself, and I guess you as a journalist and your colleagues, whatever we get, if we get to the quarterfinals, it's almost an overachievement.
That's right, but you know, what happens is, what generally happens is that the closer to the tournament we get, then the more excited everyone gets, the more excited fans get, the more excited, you know, bookmakers get, the more excited us journalists get, and so then that tends to, you know, hang it. And also, you don't want to be too negative. You know, if I mean, you mentioned before about the press being accused of building them up, and to a certain extent, you know, there's something in that, in the sense that also the press going into it can't really win if we're too negative and say, well, England have got no chance to grab it. It's like, oh, you know, why don't you get behind our boys? And generally, you know, the press want to be behind England because it's good for our business. It's good for, you know, there's nothing like a feel-good story. But you're right to a certain extent. I think in terms of pricing, for example, in previous tournaments, certainly before, well, actually, all the tournaments that I've covered, England have always been incredibly short. I mean, comparative to what they should be.
Yeah.
But then again, I've always put that down to, you know, there's a premium, there's an element of England fans being incredibly loyal and incredibly supportive, and obviously reflecting that support in the bets they have.
Definitely.
You know, so they're backing out of passion, out of patriotism, not out of actually, you know, logic, football and logic. But I think this time around, you're right. I think this time around, I think the FA, and it's been, to be fair, it's been headed by Greg Dyke's comments over the past few months, saying basically that they'll be, you know, they'll do well to get out of the group. In his most recent interview, he said they will do well to get out of the group, and after that, in the lap of the gods. And obviously, he made the cutthroat gesture at the draw. And there's been a general drip of are basically just they don't call it lowering expectations. They call it managing expectations, as they would do. But it's true. And I spoke to Steven Gerrard about a year ago. And he's, you know, he said very candidly, he said, look, the bottom line is, you know, we are not one of the top three or four nations going into a tournament. You know, we are in maybe the top 12, top 14. You know, so that will give us an accurate reflection that basically you get to the knockout stages and then you have what you would call a puncher's chance. But I think this time, I think you're right, because of the combination of where these tournaments are being held and the lowering of expectations, I think we'll be a lot more realistic going into this one.
Before we have a look at this question of form over familiarity, yeah, that Roy Hodgson's got before him, and every international manager does, I guess, what do you make very briefly about England bringing in Dr. Steve Peters, the psychiatrist? I guess it's as close as we've been to Glenn Hoddle's reign, isn't it? I'm not saying it is like that. I fully believe in it, and I think it's got massive benefits when you think that the GB Olympic cycling team have used Steve Peters and other people have used sports psychologists and sports psychiatrists. Yeah. It can only do good, I suppose, can't it?
Yeah, I think you would be incredibly sort of picky and negative if you were to say to find fault in getting Steve Peters in. I think what's clinched, you know, what I would say is that a psychiatrist working with cyclists, and obviously that's predominantly who he's worked with, but he's also worked with Ronnie O'Sullivan and other sporting people. But what I'm going to come to is, I think what clinched it is the fact of work that he's done at Liverpool. And I think Steven Gerrard must have been very influential in convincing Roy, well, at least sort of saying to Roy, this guy has, you know, helped me. I mean, Steven said that. He's helped him because, first of all, you think, it's a different type of discipline, you know, cycling. It's an individual sport. It's a physical sport. It's it's you and your own mind to a certain extent. Obviously, football is extremely different. I think it's always difficult with footballers because it's just a team sport. However, I think what's happened is that Steve Peters has gone into Anfield, and Steven Gerrard has seen firsthand the work he's done and has worked with him, and has thought he could be of benefit to him. You know, so, and as Steven said, you know, in a great quote, he said you're not going to be able to perform a Cruyff turn because of Steve Peters or hit a ball any more accurately or run faster, but anything that helps you cope with the demands, the mental demands of tournament football, then it has to be good. So I think it's a really good appointment. And just going back to the Glenn Hoddle thing, you know, I think the difference with that is that certainly Glenn Hoddle's choice of that sort of help had no experience whatsoever in the sporting world, and he clearly comes recommended by a whole list of very successful sports people.
Yeah, and we're living a different time now, maybe a little bit more of an accepting time of different methods. This idea then, form over familiarity, a lot of people out there, fans, journalists, whoever, think that you should pick on form all the time. You should always pick on form. I tend to sit in a different camp, Andy. I don't know what you think. I think a manager has to be familiar with his players, has to be familiar with how people work, and that familiarity may also be that you pick a clump of players from the same club so they've got someone to be within the camp, because it's a fallacy that every single player in every single squad, when they go on a trip, all mingle together and have a great time. They tend to be in little niches because that's who they know. The Man United players might be with themselves, the Liverpool players, etc., etc. Not that many of them mix together. Where would you go? If Adam Johnson now scores hat tricks every week until the end of the season, should he go to Brazil, for instance?
Well, it's an interesting question. I wouldn't. When you say form over familiarity, I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're together for a long time at the World Cup. They go to Portugal to a training camp on, I think it's May the 19th. They have a week there. They come back. They play Peru at Wembley on May the 30th. And then the following day, they fly out to Miami. They're there for just over a week where they play, I think it's Honduras and Ecuador. And then they go to Rio just in the first week of June, and they could be there for, you know, a long time. So I think familiarity, I think if you put players, there's time to become familiar. I mean, there's time for Roy Hodgson to become familiar with players maybe that he doesn't know too much about. There's time for players to become familiar with themselves. So I don't really think, I think the idea that you just pick players because you've had them before or because they know other players is probably not one that you should pursue. And I think it can be quite damaging when you have those cliques. And there's no doubt about it. And players have spoke about it before. There have been cliques in the past. You know, Manchester United, Liverpool. I mean, some of the cliques have actually been maybe on north-south lines. And people, many players have written about it after World Cups and European Championships. But then again, within the team, then maybe it's useful. I mean, we saw five players from Liverpool start last night. Now, I think a little bit of that might have been due to the fact that they haven't got a game this weekend, so we have more Liverpool involvements. But, you know, if you're playing well, successfully, and with an understanding, then there's no problem in that. I personally think, at the moment, I think because of those expectations that we mentioned aren't particularly high, I think at the moment he's got a chance to go more on form and more adventurous with his selection. Because basically, if you say, well, let's go with what I'm familiar with, so let's go with Ashley Cole at left back. Let's go, say, with, I don't know, a James Milner in the team rather than an Adam Lallana. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that's familiarity, but it's familiarity that hasn't worked in the past and hasn't got us, you know, to finals of tournaments. So why not go with players who are clearly in form, who are young, who are adventurous, because in the end, what have we got to lose?
Yeah, that's fair. You mentioned the Ashley Cole situation there. If you believe the bookmakers, Ashley Cole is 20-1 on to get on the plane to Brazil. Leighton Baines is 25-1 on, so they're the two. They're the two he picks. Luke Shaw is the one that everyone's talking about, and he has been backed in. Still 2-1 though. I've heard Roy Hodgson talk to Five Live, and wouldn't say he kind of completely intimated it, but he was hinting heavily that Cole wouldn't go. What's your thoughts on this?
I think 2-1. I think I might do a better the day later. That might be it. It wasn't going to be that, but now you tell me that Luke Shaw is, you can get 2-1 for him to be going. I would happily invest in that, mainly because I think that what you know this is a real this left backs and I mentioned those interesting sort of side stories from the game at Wembley. And that was one. We were told Baines is going. So, Roy Hodgson has said that Baines is going, hence why he will play no part in the game against Denmark. And then it was an audition. It was Roy Hodgson turned it into an audition. Ashley Cole versus Luke Shaw, 45 minutes apiece. And you had to say, you know, Ashley Cole came out and did really well, did what Ashley Cole told us, was solid defensively, was okay going forward. Didn't make any mistakes defensively. I mean, he's been our best defender, probably England's best defender, for the last 10-15 years. Luke Shaw came on and, you know, was also impressed. You know, was great going forward, was adventurous, was, you know, looking to make things happen. So I just then came away thinking, well, you know, you talk about familiarity. Will Roy Hodgson think, well, actually, I want to take Ashley Cole because I know he's in major tournaments, he's never let England down. In fact, at major tournaments, he's generally been amongst the best two or three players, most reliable players for England. But then, you know, I thought, well, I wonder if Hodgson will just be a little bit adventurous, and is it possible that he takes Baines, Cole and Luke Shaw? Mm. And, you know, Luke Shaw, I've seen him play several times this season, including a game when Southampton won at Anfield. And you know, to me, you look at him now, and I'm thinking, well, you know, this is a guy who you think Gareth Bale, and you think, well, actually, maybe Hodgson could be allowed the luxury of taking someone like Shaw in addition to those two left backs, and he may want to use him left side of midfield. Also, I mean, I have to say, it's always a mystery to me how right backs can switch and play left back, but left backs can't switch and play right back.
Yeah,
which is the other one. So to me, I would take Luke Shaw because he is clearly an extremely talented young player. Mm. Now, I wouldn't just say, well, we have to make a choice of two players into one position, and we've actually got four if you think of Kieran Gibbs to make up that four. So that's an interesting one. So I personally would, if I was Hodgson, I'd say I'd be adventurous and I'd pick Baines, Cole and Shaw.
Mm. Are there any other areas of the pitch that you think what about this Raheem Sterling, Andros Townsend area? Yeah. Adam Johnson seems to have fallen out of favour a little bit now. Obviously, he probably wasn't picked because of the cup final and everything else. But whether he goes or not is an interesting one. I mean, the favourites to go, both Sterling and Townsend are both odds on to be on the plane.
Oh, they really, yeah. Mm. But I mean, I wouldn't be, I have to say, I wouldn't, now, and it's funny how these things change, isn't it? Because,
well, injuries can get, I mean, anything can get in the way, obviously, between now and then.
But also, like, in terms of how you know, early on in the domestic season, you certainly wouldn't have made Raheem Sterling odds on to be, odds on to being a Liverpool team, never mind an England team. But last night, I think, I mean, you know, and I do think it was useful, the game against Denmark, because I think Sterling and combined with his form for Liverpool lately, I think Sterling is odds on to go, and I think he will go. Right. I wouldn't say the same about Andros Townsend, and who would have thought that? You know, when he performed so well for England last year, and you know, well, actually, you know, so startlingly well. So I would actually, I wouldn't be backing odds on Andros Townsend to go. I think that you're looking at Sterling, Oxlade-Chamberlain, those type of players. You know, if he's looking for those players who can play on the flanks, I think the two at the moment who are probably ahead are Oxlade-Chamberlain and Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it depends where you play Lallana, because the one big thing I think I assume Lallana, I don't know if you've got Lallana's price to go, but he must be odds on now after
that. He's 2-1 on. The other guys are 4-6, and Oxlade-Chamberlain's 8-13. Obviously, can play in a couple of different roles as well, and 4-6 for Raheem Sterling to go. So, I mean, they are odds on, but they are backable prices.
Absolutely. Well, I would certainly back Oxlade-Chamberlain. Again, you always look for a little bit of flexibility, adaptability in the player when you go into a tournament. Oxlade-Chamberlain has shown at Arsenal that he can actually play in a more central role. He's done that a couple of occasions. He can play wide on the right. I think he's a shoo-in. Lallana, after, you know, with that, you know, strange with that one sort of substitute performance, you know, showed that he can create things, and he's a very level-headed young man. I think he'll go. I think it'll be very interesting to see what Roy comes up with for his starting 11. And again, assuming full fitness, which is probably unlikely. But I just think that I think it's slightly more uncertain now. You know, the waters have been muddied rather than cleared by the game against Denmark.
Just finally, how many Southampton players do you think will go?
I think Lallana and I think Shaw will go.
Yeah.
I do think that will be it. I don't think Lambert will go, and I don't think Rodriguez will go.
Yeah, fair enough. The interesting thing about all these bets, and they're all under the specials tab of the William Hill football section on the website, you can actually double them up and put them into an ACCA. So, I mean, just, you know, the players we were talking about just there, Lallana at 2-1 on, Sterling at 4-6, and Oxlade-Chamberlain at 8-11, all those three to be on the plane returns you 100-30. The treble.
Yeah. So it's not bad. I was going to say that's the way to bet on this one is to do them in combinations.
Yeah.
And those three that you just picked out, I would say that's a very good one to have.
Yeah. The fascinating thing is here, you could go down this list and try and pick your squad and stick it in an ACCA, and it could be a life changer if you get it with the if you agree with Roy Hodgson. It'd be remiss of me not just to quickly mention the home nations results. Obviously not as important as England because not preparing for a World Cup, but Scotland had a great victory in Poland, of course. Wales, with Gareth Bale's help, of course, 3-1 winners. Good win over Iceland with Sam Vokes continuing his great scoring form from the Championship into internationals. Also, not such an exciting night in Cyprus, where Northern Ireland had a 0-0 draw. Gareth McCauley getting sent off there, and Republic of Ireland losing 2-1 at home to Serbia. The FA Cup weekend is just around the corner, Andy. It's getting to the nitty-gritty now, isn't it? We've got the following matches to look forward to. Arsenal, Everton, Sheffield United, Charlton. So there'll be one non-Premier League team in the next phase. Hull, Sunderland and Manchester City versus Wigan again. As far as the games go, some interesting ones. I mean, Everton and Arsenal probably kicking themselves thinking, oh, we could have maybe got a slightly easier one in this round if we want to go and win this competition. But massive game for Sheffield United and Charlton.
Oh, brilliant. And you know, this is what the FA Cup is about, in the sense that, you know, I think Sheffield United's revival in League One has been astonishing.
Yes,
absolutely astonishing. And it's coincided pretty much with a great cup run. And Charlton as well. I mean, you saw what it meant to Charlton when they won at Sheffield Wednesday in the replay. Excuse me. And those great pictures of Chris Powell celebrating, swinging from the crossbar in his suit. It was absolutely fantastic. And I think I think that is where the FA Cup is so underestimated. It can give you such a lift. And it's given both of those clubs a lift. And, of course, one of those clubs is now going to be in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. One of those clubs is going to be at Wembley. So I think that's, you know, in a way, I think all these ties are great and for different reasons. And I love that tie. And I think that would be, you know, really fascinating. I think Sheffield United at home, I think, and the way they're playing at the moment, I think they've got to fancy their chances. I think, I mean, I don't know whether they are, but I would have them in my book as a shade of favouritism.
I think the way they've been performing recently, I think you'd have to agree with that. The prices are 5-4 for Sheffield United, 21-10 the draw, and 12-5 shots of Charlton, the outsiders of the three bets. Hull Sunderland haven't scored a goal against Hull this season. I think Hull have beaten them twice, 1-0 and 2-0. So Hull would have to. I mean, they are favourites at home, and you'd give them the nod there, wouldn't you, in the home stadium?
Just about. I would just about give the nod. The result, I think that Gus Poyet certainly won't want, probably Steve Bruce won't want. the draw, I would be going for on that one. I think Sunderland, you know, came out of the Capital One Cup final with an awful lot of credit. You know, and they played really well. In the end, they were undone by an exceptional team. More importantly, or more crucially, they were undone by exceptional goals. Other than that, I thought they played well. They could have gone maybe 2-0 up. Barini maybe could have made a 2-0. I think they showed a togetherness. I saw Sunderland in an early round against Kidderminster Harriers at the Stadium of Light, and I thought the impression I got from Gus Poyet was that, you know, he didn't really want this cup run to go on very far. Well, he didn't want it to go on, but he thought that it would really affect the league form, and it might do. But I think now, when you're at this stage and you are, you know, they've had a taste of Wembley, going back there for, you know, the one game away of going back there. So I think they'll put in a really good performance. I can't split those two. I think a replay on that one.
And a lot of people called Manchester City's win at Wembley at the weekend revenge for last year over the, you know, for losing in the FA Cup final. Well, they can actually put that to bed this week, can't they, with a home tie against Wigan. I mean, the 2-13 to win this. Wigan 16-1, 13-2 the draw. Once City got going in the second half, they looked just about back to where they were about 3 weeks ago.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing with City, it'll be interesting to see what... This tie fascinates me. It'll be interesting to see what team he plays, Pellegrini. Obviously, he'll be looking forward to, you know, with one eye on the return leg in Barcelona. Now, Wigan, you know, Wigan, did you say 16-1, Wigan?
Yeah.
I mean, 16-1 and 13-2, the draw. You know, that is, I mean, to me, that they are really big odds for a team that is absolutely flying in the Championship. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a team that has gone to the City Ground, albeit Forest had some injury problems, but, you know, Wigan had a few players out. They went to the City Ground and they won 4-1. Under Rosler, they are absolutely flying. I wouldn't put Wigan down as my bet of the week, but I have to say I think those are long odds, and I think it'll be a lot closer than people think. I think we're going to go in there absolutely. I heard the interviews after they beat Forest, absolutely full of confidence. A couple of their lone players, certainly Martin Waghorn in particular, won't be able to play. I know he's cup tied, but even so, I just think that it's a game that, yes, of course, City probably are 2-13 shots. However, I do think that Wigan will give it a really good go there.
Mm. Well, the size of that price, that 16-1, just means that you've got quite a lot more insurance on your side. So you could back Wigan with a 2-goal start. Still, that's still odds against 8-5. That means you get a Wigan win, a draw, and a City win by 1 goal on your side. So even if City were to win 2-1, 3-2,
Lee, that's the sort of bet that I would go for. I don't think it'll be a landslide win for Man City. I don't think they'll thump Wigan. I think Wigan are a good, are becoming, they're an improving Championship side, a side that is actually upwardly mobile in the Championship towards the end of a season at a crucial end. They've got a great young manager. I saw his Brentford team. I watched what he did there. He was brilliant. He had them playing really good football, and that's carried on there after he's left. He has now, you know, got Wigan playing some really good attacking football. And people also forget that although a couple of players left obviously the manager left and a couple of players from that FA Cup winning side left, there's still, you know, quite a few good players who played in that game still around. So, yeah, so that's the sort of bet. I think, you know, Wigan with a start might be a good bet.
Mm, yeah, even Wigan plus 3 goals, so you get a City 1 or 2 goal victory on your side. That's 2-1 on, which might be a price for people to put in various hackers. Just quickly, the outrights before we get Andy's bet of the week. Manchester City are odds on to win the FA Cup, 5-6. Arsenal 11-4. Everton 5-1. Hull 12-1. Sunderland 14-1. Wigan 50 to 1, 66 to 1 Charlton, and 66 to 1 Sheffield United. We didn't mention the Arsenal Everton game. I mean, pressure's on Arsenal again, isn't it? That, you know, they need to get a result there. And Roberto Martinez has got, he's got a little love affair with the FA Cup. I still wouldn't be surprised if he did what Moyes didn't do all those years this season and get to the final and maybe even win it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, my bet of the week is Everton to win at Arsenal. Yep. I do think they'll win there. And having given those odds there that you just said, I wouldn't mind doubling up Everton to win at the Emirates against Arsenal and go on and win the competition outright.
Yeah.
I do think you're right. I do think Martinez, you know, really really does treat the FA Cup really preciously. And he's got good reason to, because I remember his win with Wigan in the quarterfinals against Everton last season was a result that actually in the long term pretty much secured him his move to Goodison Park, and of course they went on to win it. I do think Everton now will be looking at the Premier League and thinking, well, you know, fourth is pretty much out of reach. Even fifth is going to be a big ask for them, with Spurs still going quite well. So this will be, you know, I mean, their most important game of the season is Saturday's game against Arsenal. Simple as that. And I think you're right. I think it's not so much as well that Everton are playing quite well. They're extremely motivated. I do think Arsenal go through this phase. You know, we've seen it, and we all like the way Arsenal play, but we've seen it over season after season. They have a period of the season when basically everything implodes. And I was at the Stoke Arsenal game last Saturday, and that was as poor as I've seen Arsenal play for many a year, really. They were awful. They were unimaginative. They were uninspiring. They were physically not really very strong. I was shocked, and when I saw the level of that performance, I immediately thought ahead to the following weekend when they're going to play welcome Everton. And I thought, well, you know, Everton will be a good bet to win that game.
Yeah, yeah, that's very fair. 17-5 to win the game, 5-1 to win the FA Cup as well. Andy, thanks very much for your time.
No problem.
Brilliant. That's Andy Dunn, the chairman of the Football Writers Association. This podcast is available at footballwriters.co.uk. It's williamhill.com/podcasts. It's on Audioboo and also available if you subscribe on iTunes to the William Hill Football Podcast. Andy's on Twitter as well. You may well be aware of that. Nearly 51,000 people are. It's AndyDunn_SM. Thanks to Andy, and we'll be back next week for more of the same. If you haven't a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.